Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Hello and welcome to Africa Link on this Thursday, the 24th of August. I'm Eunice Wanjiru.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura in Bonn, Germany.
Coming up, South Sudan's President Salva Kiir talks to DW in an exclusive interview.
Calling for the national dialogue is a hope that those who have grievances which were not addressed by the agreement will come and air out their grievances.
And anger in Rwanda's capital Kigali as the government cracks down on street vendors.
Not all of us are of the same financial status. I am a single mother of three and I try to make ends meet. What are we supposed to do?
Stay tuned for these stories and more, plus your reactions on social media. But first, let's hear what's been happening around the globe.
This is Abubakar Jalo with the DW News. The death toll from two separate ferry wrecks in Brazil has surged to 41. The regional security department in the state of Pará said 19 people were confirmed dead after a boat sank on the Zingu River. The Brazilian Navy said 22 people died when another ferry sank off the state of Bahia. At least two people were hurt after a blast in Kiev as Ukraine was celebrating Independence Day. Initial police reports suggested it was the work of hooligans. The incident occurred during the visit of U.S. Defense Secretary Jim Mattis. Mattis, who spoke at the ceremony, said the United States was committed to helping Ukraine.
We do not and we will not accept Russia's seizure of the Crimea. And despite Russia's denials, we know they are seeking to redraw international borders by force, undermining the sovereign and free nations of Europe. Mr. President, we continue to support Ukraine and remain committed to building the capacity of your armed forces to defend their country and to defend protecting the Ukrainian people.
The death toll from Typhoon Hato has risen to 16 after the storm left a trail of destruction across southern China. It blacked out Macau's mega casinos and battered skyscrapers in Hong Kong. This news comes to you from DW, Germany's international broadcaster. In Switzerland, as many as 14 people are feared missing after a massive landslide swept away a mountainside in the Swiss Alps. The landslide, which struck on Wednesday, ripped apart buildings and forced the evacuation of about 100 residents in the village of Bondo near the Italian border. Russia's Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov has told a news conference that US President Donald Trump's new strategy for Afghanistan is, quote, a dead end. Moscow's response came after President Trump approved an extended American presence in Afghanistan and bet on the use of force. In the United Kingdom, the Office for National Statistics has said net migration to Britain fell to its lowest level in 3 years. Brandon Lewis is the British Immigration Minister.
It highlights the fact that net migration is coming down, which is what I think the British public want to see. And that means that actually within that, particularly for the non-EU migration, net migration figures, we've seen a 20% fall.
The drop is caused by European Union citizens leaving and fewer arriving since the Brexit vote. Jeremy Corbyn is leader of the opposition Labour Party.
We have to look at what the effects of migration are on the lack of people working, the public service, the NHS, particularly in parts of England, are facing problems of nurse recruitment because of the reduction in the number of EU citizens coming.
And for some sports news, Zlatan Ibrahimovic has signed a new contract with Manchester United. The football star said he is back to finish what he started. In 46 appearances for United last season, the Swedish striker scored 28 goals but was released in the summer after sustaining a serious knee injury. Some news coming in now. Angola's ruling MPLA party said it has won a majority in Wednesday's election with 5 million votes counted so far. The main opposition party has disputed the claims. For more news, visit our website at dw.com. I am Abubakar Jalo.
This is Africa Link with me, Eunice Wanjiru.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura.
We head to South Sudan, in a country which has been involved in violent conflict since 2013, when a split between President Salva Kiir and his former vice president Riek Machar escalated into war. The brutal conflict has forced parts of the country to the brink of famine, and more than a quarter of South Sudanese have since fled their homes, 2 million of them seeking safety in neighbouring countries such as Uganda. The past 4 years have seen many broken ceasefire agreements and failed peace deals. Recently, President Salva Kiir officially launched a national dialogue in a renewed attempt to bring peace to South Sudan. DW's Adrian Krish met up with him and wanted to find out whether this national dialogue will work out this time.
Well, I believe in the final attempt by calling for the national dialogue is a hope that, you know, those who have grievances which were not addressed by the agreements will come and air out their grievances and will be taken into consideration by the national dialogue, so that at the end, when the resolutions are passed by the members of the national dialogue, these things will be taken into consideration in the next formations of the government.
Yeah. But it seems that not all sides are willing to participate. Your former Vice President Riek Machar doesn't seem to be very willing to join this dialogue.
Well, we don't really exclude anybody, but for Riek, he knows why. It is not him who is not interested in joining. But the whole region does not want him to be in the region, because whenever he comes here, he will create a situation that takes people back to war. And so his presence here will create instability in the whole region, not only in South Sudan.
Mr. President, the humanitarian situation in the country is quite severe. It is said that about 2 million people are on the brink of malnutrition. 1 million people left to Uganda alone. How are you trying to improve this humanitarian crisis?
The humanitarian crisis can be improved once there is silence of the guns. The humanitarian organizations will come back and they will serve the people, and everybody will go back to his or her place.
So that means it's not a priority for your government right now?
It is a priority. This is why we are working with the NGOs to serve the people. And there is no reason for us not to pay attention to the people. The people who ran to Uganda were chased away by social media. There was no fighting in their area. The UN reported that there is a looming genocide in South Sudan, which has not happened up to now. And people were being called in their houses to be told to run away, that if you don't go, after 1 hour, you will be a dead person.
Mr. President, let me ask you in the end about the issue of elections. Next year is the next time when the elections could take place. Do you think that will happen?
It is said in the agreement that elections will take place in 2018. And we remain waiting for that day to come.
Adrian Krish was speaking to South Sudan's President Salva Kiir. And for more on the interview, check out our website. That's dw.com/Africa.
And over now to the world news. The U.S. hopes to resolve the long-standing rivalry between Israel and Palestine. And White House advisor Jared Kushner has kicked off a renewed push by the Trump administration to start Middle East peace talks. This comes even as growing Palestinians lose patience with lack of progress so far. Kushner met with Israel Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's office in the office in Jerusalem on Thursday afternoon before heading to the West Bank city of Ramallah to meet President Mahmoud Abbas in the evening. Lina Jha filed this report.
Demonstrators in Palestine took to the streets ahead of the visit by Kushner, President Donald Trump's son-in-law, on Thursday evening. They held banners that read in English, USA must stop supporting collective punishment, expansion of illegal settlements, and illegal blockade on Gaza. Mustafa Baghouti, Palestinian Liberation Organization Executive Committee member, did not hesitate to say why they were unhappy.
We are totally unhappy that this American administration has conducted no pressure on Israel to stop settlement activities that are killing any potential for peace, although the settlement activities increased by 70% since President Trump was elected. And we don't accept the fact that this American administration is the first one that does not recognize the right of the Palestinian people to have their own state and refrain so far from even mentioning the word two-state solution.
After initially welcoming the election of Trump, the Palestinians have expressed increasing frustration with what they say is a failure in the U.S. president to offer a clear vision for peace.
Lina Jar with that report.
Now, Rwanda's capital, Kigali, has made a name for itself as one of the cleanest cities in Africa. But what is the cost that comes with maintaining this status? The mayor of Kigali has announced that the National Police will now take over in the enforcement of the ban on street vending from local security forces. This has brought about fear and criticism among the vendors. This report from Nasra Bishumba is read by Susan Horton.
In a bid to bring both cleanliness and order to the city and to increase its tax base, the Kigali City Council has, for the past 2 years, enforced strict directives designed to stop unauthorized street trading. But in a press conference held yesterday afternoon, the Kigali City Mayor, Pascal Nayamulinda, said the current measures have not worked and it's time to use more force.
It's not a matter of joke when regulations are set. We must uproot this issue and we are not going to be lenient. This is a serious matter. We have in the past been patient, but that did not fix the problem. We have the national police, we have the military, and we will rely on those because this is a security matter and it's not a problem that is too big for them.
In a strongly worded warning, the spokesman of the National Police, Teos Badega, said that his forces were coming to the streets to enforce the law, but also as a warning to vendors whom he accused of physically attacking security personnel.
The manpower that we have deployed on the streets, especially the crowded ones, will be visible to everyone. Our police officers will be more equipped. There will be, for example, be cars purposely ready to ferry the vendors and their goods.
Today, in the city's busiest centre, Niabugogo, about 4 police trucks were parked near the bus park, and angry but scared vendors were converging in small groups about 500 metres away. Most of their merchandise was out of sight. They expressed their anger and disappointment about the decision to use a national force to crack down on them. This is what one of them had to say.
Not all of us are of the same financial status. I am a single mother of 3 and I try to make ends meet by paying my rent and educating my children. I do not want them to end up in the streets. They kept chasing me. What if I was hit by a car? My children would die. What are we supposed to do? Do they want me to go to the streets and become a prostitute?
Human Rights Watch has accused Rwandan authorities in the past of forcefully rounding up street vendors and street children and detaining them in transit centres, where some claimed they were severely beaten.
A report by Nasra Bishumba.
And on the social media, we asked you this question. Tell us what you think. Karamba Diaby is Germany's first African-born black Bundestag member, and he has filed charges against racist Facebook commentators. The far-right NDP has questioned his right to represent German people on its page. The reactions we have been getting on these unis have been overwhelming, and it's ignited mixed reactions. I will read the first one here from Ghana, from Abdul Aziz Mohammed. He says Mr. Diaby should understand that his position now is a test case, so his way of dealing with it will either win over the people or alienate them. If I were him, I would find a way of endearing myself to them rather than the court action that he's embarking on.
We also have another reaction here from Josh Cooper from Malawi. He's saying it's unfortunate now that we are moving towards the new world order and the world is becoming more and more of one global village. A small section of individuals remain cast with racist ideas. With time, let's hope humanity begins to look beyond racial lines. It all boils down to the fostering mass social integration to curb the challenge. I'm sure, yeah, we have more comments, Zippy. What do you have on your front?
I have one from Abayomi, Nigeria. I'm not sure if this is positive or negative, but he says in reality he can only... The Bundestag member can only present the locality he represents in the Congress and not the German people or history. He's taking his luck too far.
Yes, and just to remind our listeners, you can go to our Facebook page, that's DW Africa, to leave your comments there. And also, we have a WhatsApp, just visit our website to see and leave your reactions also there. We also have El Shaddai from Ghana, who's saying, as always, views in any society will be divided between two sides. If I'm not mistaken, he's the first African to assume such a position. It is natural to have a backlash. Stereotypes from people form about people from different regions of the world. Thank you so much for your comments and stay tuned to Africa Link.
You are listening to Africa Link, coming to you from Bonn, Germany. I'm Zipporah Nyambura.
And I'm Eunice Onjiro.
Coming up in the next 15 minutes, thousands of bidders in first South African auction of rhino horns, but it has been met with anger.
John Hume's agenda is about profit. He's exacerbated the loopholes that we have in our law to trade and farm in rhinos.
And also from South Africa, we'll get some cravings from healthy fermented foods, so don't go away.
A United Nations ban on international trade in rhino horns has been in place since 1977. But that has not stopped South Africa from going ahead with the first online auction of rhino horns, which has attracted thousands of bidders since opening on Wednesday. But it has also sparked anger, since conservation groups say it will encourage poachers. The country's largest private rhino breeder, John Hume, says the sale will help him raise funds to protect the rhino. Tusokumalo reports from Johannesburg.
The three-day auction is the first sale of rhino horn since a ban was imposed in 2009. All bidders are required to put down a deposit of just over $7,000. Over the years, private rhino breeders have gone to court seeking permission to sell their rhino horn stockpiles. They've argued that the sale will help them raise needed funds to protect the rhino from the scourge of poaching. The courts permitted domestic trade in rhino horn in April this year, but the government stalled the process. This forced the country's largest rhino breeder, John Hume, to approach the courts, forcing the Department of Environmental Affairs to issue him a permit. Hume says the permission to sell is not only a relief for rhino farmers, but for the entire rhino population.
If I don't sell rhino horn, in 10 years' time, my 1,535 rhinos out there are all going to be dead.
However, animal rights groups disagree. They fear domestic sale in rhino horn will fuel its demand. They say the government has not put up adequate measures to ensure salt horns are not smuggled to China and Vietnam, where a kilogram can fetch up to $60,000. Michelle Pickover, director at the animal rights group EMS Foundation, says nothing can justify the sale of rhino horn.
John Hume's agenda is about profit. He's exacerbated the loopholes that we have in our law to trade and farm in rhinos. Our rhinos should be protected rather than farmed, commodified and traded. It's absolutely outrageous.
But Hume says the ban has not helped. South Africa has been losing around 1,000 rhinos a year while the ban was in place. Moreover, the sale will help cover the $170,000 monthly cost that he incurs in protecting his herd of rhino. John Hume again.
There is only one way that I will pay for this cost. That is to sell my rhino horn and to use that money to protect my rhino. So to me, the people who are stopping me from selling my rhino horn and protecting my rhino may as well be joined with the poachers, because they will kill my rhino.
South Africa is home to 80% of the rhino population worldwide. The sale of rhino horn is restricted within South Africa. According to the World Wildlife Fund, poaching in South Africa has increased enormously since 2007. The Private Rhino Association of South Africa says in the last 8 years, its members have spent over $100 million in protecting the rhino.
Tusokumalo reporting from Johannesburg. I hear in Vietnam, Eunice, there are rumors a prominent person was cured of cancer by extracts from the rhino horns.
Well, as we had in that report, most are smuggled to Asia and Vietnam, Vietnam and China. Vietnam market has largely pushed the poaching of rhinos in South African countries, but the question is whether legalizing sale of rhino horns would stop poachers or escalate the problem. We do have comments coming in on this. Stefan Schaefer is writing from Mozambique, and he says no product of endangered animals should be legally sold.
Patrick from Nigeria says he is, in fact, a private breeder. It's his property, which he says the rhinos, of course, and he has a right to sell them off. I believe the government should not interfere.
And Shadrach Akello says that's bad, and I will encourage killing of wildlife such as rhinos and elephants for money. Well, I don't really understand that. But we also have another one coming in from Uganda, from Charles Ongole. He says the Catchwood reference here is private breeder. If private breeding of wild animals is legal, why should private sale of products of private breeding become public matters to be sanctioned? Given to private breeders their due commercial business freedom to do what they will with their property and let public fauna be the controls of the public interest.
Views on.
There is almost no corner you can turn in South Africa's most famous city, Cape Town, without bumping into beautiful people with toned bodies. And the places they go to feel their food cravings are equally cool and widely spread over the city. DW's reporter Kerstin Velter met a passionate entrepreneur who not only owes his life to fermented foods, but dedicated it to spreading the knowledge as far as he can, in a, let's say, very sexy way.
Good afternoon, guys. How we doing?
What? Did this waiter just say he's doing sexy? Must be part of the corporate identity here at Sexy Foods. All wood, plants and natural tones. In fact, there's a lot of see-through things here, mostly jars. In them, a wide range of colourful cabbages, sauces, juices. At least that's what I'm assuming they are. James Kaper would say it's the essential must-haves for every fridge, the ultimate food condimenting. He's the owner of Sexy Foods, wearing a shirt with cacti on it and offering spiky opinions about fermented foods being a trend.
All the kimchi that I'm seeing in the restaurants, when I taste them, they're just a pickled vegetable. It's not concentrating on the bacteria content. A fermented product is not just a fermented product. If you've been put off sauerkraut, it's probably because you've eaten the wrong sauerkraut.
James loves bacteria, the good ones. Those who keep our gut flora in balance and make us radiate well-being and, well, sexiness. That's why he named his restaurant like this, seeing that there's not a single plate going out without heaps of cultured stuff on it. The products, about €4 a jar, are kept in a giant cooling chamber, and the menu lists dishes which are beyond organic, all naturally probiotic. I get a favorite, the bunless burger.
So, here we have, on the side, I've got a little bit of extra original sauerkraut. Then I've got the sexy biotic sauce. Then we've got the turmeric mustard, cultured. Then we have just some zoodle cucumber. Underneath is the turmeric kraut. Then we have our kimchi pate, a little bit of avo, and just some leafy greens.
James is adamant. Everything you eat here makes you healthier and helps you get back a balanced ecosystem in your guts. The krauts and sprouts and kimchis are driven in daily from a specialized farm 2 hours away, where they are fermented with the help of good and unpolluted strains of bacteria, which don't occur in the city anymore. James learned all about those processes and their medicinal benefits from people in the alternative health scene. Out of necessity, he says, because with 17, when he was a professional cricketer, he was diagnosed with cancer.
So cancer of the lymph glands, and I went through a lot of chemotherapy. And then the cancer came back and my body hadn't recovered from all the chemotherapy. So I went on a mission for 7 years, go through all the different types of things in the health cuisine. But nothing made as big an impact as the probiotics in food. And now I live on the bacteria because I constantly am refueling it till I get to the stage that it's naturally looking after itself.
At Sexy Foods, the tourists have almost finished their first purely probiotic meal.
So how is the food, just to ask?
Oh, it's delicious.
Actually, I don't know what I'm eating right now, most of the things, but I'm loving it.
Yeah, it's pretty good. And it's quite different from what you eat usually, your vegetarian food. It's a bit bitter, I don't know. No, it's hard to describe. you have to try.
That's exactly what owner James Kaper wants. His customers to be convinced by the taste of his products and not by the theory of being medicinal food.
Kerstin Velter reporting. And before you think of going to visit the restaurant, you might have to wait a little bit. The owner is taking a break, but will reopen his restaurant in Musenberg, Surfers Paradise, just 20 minutes from Cape Town. Check out Sexy Foods on Facebook for updates. We have something similar, ZP, to that here in Germany. It's called Superfoods.
Yes, I've heard about it. Rather, I've seen it in the supermarkets. I think this is similar to what they are taking in South Africa, the sexy food. In Germany, it actually costs you an arm and a leg. It's very expensive.
I can imagine. It's because it's also very rare and very nutritional.
I think we're actually going back to the traditional foods. This is actually palau. It's what people ate ages ago.
Oh, yes. And dear listeners, keep your comments coming.
Speaking out.
Police in Uganda have arrested a businessman in connection with the recent killings of women in Wakiso District near the capital, Kampala. Residents are still struggling to come to terms with the gruesome murder of the 17 women in a span of 3 months. Uganda Police Chief Kale Kaihura says the murders are ritually motivated and the businessman behind it has been painkillers to get him human blood. But the locals are frustrated with the police efforts to arrest them. Our colleague Alex Gitter has been following the happenings that have left many shocked and traumatized. The victims were mostly sex workers, students and housewives.
We have these thugs in the community. Today it could be me. But it's not isolated only to me. Tomorrow it can be you. Because these thugs are still around.
Residents of Nansana Municipality in Wakiso held a meeting to discuss the latest happenings in their district. Present is the Inspector General of the Uganda Police, Kale Kaihura. He has been holding such meetings to listen and reassure locals since May this year. Kaihura says they have arrested one suspect, only known as Kawesi, who was admitted to killing 8 women on orders of the businessman. The businessman has since been arrested.
Kawesi is not alone. That's the name of the suspect. He's part of a gang. But the good news is that we have got all of them, at least most of them. Those who haven't got have run away. As soon as we get evidence, we shall hunt them down.
Despite the arrests, many people feel the police are not doing enough to arrest the criminals.
The officer in command of the police station told me that if I was tired of insecurity, I should shift and live somewhere else.
These criminals are so desperate, that's when life becomes hard. They choose to hit people with iron bars. Government needs to economically empower its people. Then you will also see people working closely with the police and the security will be easy to enforce.
This country has been destroyed by police. I will tell you openly, that's why communities do not work with us.
They now want the police posts replaced with an army barracks to reduce crime rate. The police inspector on his part believes lack of trust in his police officers has contributed to the increasing crime rates.
For me, I'm very close to the people. So they come to and give me information. A good investigator should be in the community because the community are the ones who have got the information. I mean, when you talk about investigation, what do you mean? Is it some kind of mechanical thing? You heard here some people saying that they don't give information to the police because they either fear the police or they don't trust the police. If we are going to be effective in deterring crime, in effective investigation, we must be very close to the people.
Kaihura says they suspect ex-lovers of the victims may also be involved in some of the killings. Most of the women were raped before being strangled to death. Sticks were also inserted in their private parts. Affected areas have since beefed up their security. But the women are still in fear over their safety and that of their children.
We have a security committee in this area, so what exactly are they doing? They have never arrested a single person, yet we pay them specifically to ensure our security.
Uganda police work hand in hand with crime preventers to get reports and prevent crime in communities. But the program has weakened since its members have been accused of extorting money from residents.
Alex Gitter with that report from Uganda. Back to our social media, and we ask you this question. Karamba Diaby, Germany's first African black Bundestag member, has filed charges against racist Facebook commentators. The far-right NDP questioned his right to represent German people on its page. And we have been getting lots of reactions. Eunice?
Yes, Isaac Godwin from Liberia says, I do not see why people find great deal in talking about this racist behavior or treatment. When someone doesn't want you or accept you, why force them to or compel them to? Ignore their ignorance and low mentality before it inflicts you and your mood. I hate every discussion relating to racism. Well, he's quite passionate there.
Yeah, Mumuni Razak has the same sentiments. comments, and he says he believes people who elected Karamba as a member of the Bundestag are mostly white people, so he should not allow the views of the minority to distract his attention.
And Espoir Nakivale, from a refugee settlement in Uganda, says, I'm so proud for Karamba. It's important to end this without racism. Thank you so much for your comments. This is Africa Link. I'm Eunice Njiro.
And I'm Zipora Nyambura.
Bye for now.